You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today on our show, we have Yvonne Hansen. Hi, Yvonne.
Woo. Hi, thanks for having me.
We have to say welcome back to the show. There's a lost episode somewhere that just didn't work out audio-wise, so we're finally glad to have you back to release that one to the wild. So, but before we get into it, do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners and giving them a background on who you are and how you got into photography?
Yeah, all right. Well, my name's Yvonne. I am a film photographer. I do a lot of digital photography as well. I work full-time as a freelance photographer in Vancouver, Canada. I also have a YouTube channel where I put out photography-related content, do like film and camera reviews, but I also talk a little bit about like, I have like some video essay type things where I go into, you know, more of the deep kind of meat of photography and like talk about social issues and stuff like that and how they intersect with photography.
Yeah.
So that's sweet. I got into film photography. Basically, I saw some really, really, really cool things being done with film. And my whole thing has always been in-camera effects. I was never a huge fan of like really, really photoshopping stuff. So when I saw how film photography would like open 20 new doors for different in-camera effects, I was like naturally drawn to it, like multiple exposures and like film soup and like weird darkroom. There's just so many, right? So my very first roll of film was like Lomochrome purple in a toy camera.
Oh man, what a way to start.
What I now realize was cursed, but I had a great time with it. And I've been loving the medium ever since.
Lomo purple to start.
I don't think I've ever heard that before. That's amazing. So you were a digital shooter before then. How did photography in general come into your life? Like, was something you were doing as a kid, or like, did it come to you later in life?
Well, you know, when I look back, I'm like, yeah, it was something that I was doing as a kid. Like, I was always the friend at the party who had the camera, or like, you know, camping trip. I had like 20 photos, which was a lot back then. But I really started it because I was working. I got my degree in political science, wanted to be a politician, got into like a political field, worked for a union, did the whole office job thing.
Wow.
Very different.
It was so different. And there was no creativity. There was no creative outlet at all. And I started to realize how much that actually like really is a problem for me. Like I do need the creative outlet. So I got into photography as like a quote side hustle to try and like make some money. I don't know if people can see my air quotes here, but make some money on the side while I was in university. And it really quickly took over my life. Like I joke that photography ruined my life because it just like totally derailed my career path.
Yeah.
But I mean, it set me up for like so many new adventures and I absolutely adore it now. It took quite a while before it was actually making money on the side. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But no regrets.
Wow.
Yeah. What a change.
I know.
that was like part of kind of what inspired me to start doing YouTube a little bit, was wanting to use that intersection between like politics and political science and then photography. Like, it seems like a weird Venn diagram of interests, but there is actually a little bit of overlap in the middle, and that stuff's fun to talk about.
I think it's important too, especially the stuff you do about like all the women stuff, and you know, it's good to have a spotlight on things like that that people don't think about, especially in the film photography.
Totally.
Or they purposely don't think about it or look the other way, you know what I mean? Or even if it's like unconscious or not, like you putting a spotlight on these issues is important. So thank you for that, first and foremost.
Yeah. Well, I think that that unconscious part is really important too, because a lot of it can be unconscious, like the way that people photograph women, for example. I just did a video on the psychology or the politics of angles and how your camera angle can really affect how people come across to the people who see that photo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that when people do that unconsciously, like they choose an angle because it just makes somebody look better, then they're unconsciously, you know, projecting that to the world. But in watching my videos, okay, well, now it's not unconscious, right? Like, now you know how that can affect people. So no matter what, you're going to be making a decision. And whether you make, you know, the decision to photograph somebody from a high angle or a low angle is not 100% my business. My business is showing you that, like, this shouldn't be an unconscious choice.
Wow. My mind's a little blown right now.
Yeah. It just reminds me. It reminds me of I used to shoot with one of my friends back when I was living in Tennessee all the time. She just always liked being in front of a camera. And I remember reposting one of the photos years later and her shooting me a message being like, "Oh, I never really liked those photos of me." And I was like, "Wait, you mean..." Oh, I was like, oh, I guess not everything I do is just the cat's meow of photography and stuff like that. But it wasn't the style of the photos. It was the way the photos were shot, her angles, the, you know, the kind of objective I had over what she mentally was thinking of this. It was really eye-opening, too. It was pretty cool. I didn't see that video yet. I got to watch your video on that.
And so it's like all the stuff we don't think about, right? Like, sometimes we're like, well, I'm the creative. I'm going to do what I think is the best way creatively. And you're not thinking about how somebody's like, well, I don't think I look the best, you know? And sometimes you have to switch that mindset, especially when it's like a paying client.
You know? Yeah. Like, if this is going to be the you know, their profile picture when they're sending emails, right? Like, how is that going to come across? But then, it's a balancing act too, because, you know, you say you want to shoot someone straight on to make them look like they're really like staring at the camera, but they have like a really uneven face and they know that about themselves. Mm. And so they always like to be shot from the side to like even out their features, right? So making that balancing act between like what's going to come across the best in a professional setting, like for what you're using this photo, versus like, what do you want to get out of this service that you're paying for?
Right.
It's like sometimes hard to strike that balance.
Right.
I got a lot to think about.
We have to do that personal work. That's why personal work's important. You know, you got to, you know, whatever creative itch you need to scratch. Sometimes you can't blend the two, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes a headshot session is just a headshot session.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, my favorite is when somebody's like, I want headshots, but I want them like a little bit different. And I'm like,
speak my language.
That's great. Anything but like white light with like a black shadow on one side, like I can do it. That's great.
Amazing.
Actually, I shoot a lot on film whenever somebody's like, oh, I want something a little bit different. And I'm like,
let me grab that Lomacron purple.
This will help. Yeah, perhaps
Man.
Not.
That's great.
So talking about your fashion work, how did you end up down that avenue with photography? I feel like, you know, it's very kind of a specific thing that either you're a fashion photographer or wedding, you know.
Seems so like creative. Like, you know, I do wedding photography. I do like event photography, like lifestyle, whatever. I do a bunch of that. But it doesn't have like that unbridled creativity.
Right.
And fashion clients, like so often they'll come in with like a vibe. They don't actually have like a specific idea. And so taking like this constellation of words that they use to describe their product and translating that into something visual. It's a really, really fun process.
Yeah.
And like seeing all the fashion magazines, like what people can create with just visual media, like you construct it and you photograph it and it's this piece of art now. That's the goal, man.
Yeah.
Mm.
It didn't seem like there was, when I was trying to think of like the most creative ways to use photography, it just kept coming back to fashion, and like editorial fashion specifically. I couldn't really think of like another way to make that kind of painted work in photography otherwise.
I've just always been so drawn to, I don't know what it is of, you know, Vogue magazine or like Harper's or, you know, all those, I'm like, you know, some dirty skate punk kid cruising around that loves to go pick up like the big, what is it, the November issue of Vogue, where it's like the
huge one.
I love
that.
That
you know that. I love that.
Yeah, the double issue, the double digest. That's the one that I buy every year. I only buy one a year, but I get the double digest.
I don't know what it was. I just had such like a, you learn so much from looking at others' other people's photographs too. So maybe it was just always, I don't, I mean, this is before I was even into cameras. Like it was just something that I was always drawn to. So I love seeing people's fashion work and the stuff you've been doing, you know, just again, cruising through your Instagram, like, man, you just have some beauty. Like you can tell you have like the creative spark. So it's cool. It's a cool thing to see. It's very inspiring. Inspiring, you know?
Yeah. And I like to ask like the people that, you know, have that creative, these big, like elaborate shoots, do you go in with like concepts or do you kind of see what's going to happen on the other end, or you're like, what's your process like?
A lot of the time it will be like a specific material, or like, actually this is one of the reasons why I like film so much, is because like if I'm shooting with a specific film, like Harmon Red most recently, that is such a specific look. And so no matter what you do, it's going to be colored in this really specific way.
Yeah.
So I find like starting from one baseline like that and then making everything else surrounding that like open to creativity. Mm. So, I know that I'm shooting red. So it's going to be all of these crazy, like deep, deep red tones. So, you know, what's going to complement that the best? I do like prefer to work within parameters rather than just have like unlimited creativity. Because, I mean, there was a period of time when I was organizing these huge collabs in studio with like multiple models and everything. And we'd have like a theme. And I just found it like it was too much, too many options. Like I would just kind of like go everywhere and not really like cohere to any one look.
Yeah.
Whereas when a client comes in, they're like, okay, I really need it to look like editorial. I want to use these colors. And here's what the outfit's going to be like. You can do the set and whatever. Then that's like where I really, really thrive.
That makes sense, just because you could kind of go off the rails and then, like you said, like nothing's cohesive. I also like that you mentioned, like, do you go to like a film stock, say Purple or the Red, and then you're inspired by that? I think that's like an interesting way to like come to creativity. Like, I'm going to use this film stock, you know?
And like, yeah, using it, like mobilizing the film stock in a way that super complements what's unique about that film.
Yeah.
I actually really like the pre-exposed films. I recently shot a bunch of the psychedelic blues, psych blues, number 5. It's such a fun range because it creates those parameters, like it bakes them into the film. So you have to try and build a shot around them. And you have no option. Like, you can't, like, not build the shot around it because that's the role of the new camera. That's, like, a really sweet creative challenge for me.
I still need to try those. I haven't gotten a chance to.
Oh, try those.
Yeah, I know. Every time they get brought up, I'm like, that's right. Those do exist. I really need to get a couple rolls of
it. Number 6 is the best.
Okay. All right. Mentally noted. All right. But, yeah, I guess if you go into it without thinking of, a specific film or something, you know, because each film stock has its own kind of, I don't want to say filter, but it has its own kind of like look and characteristic and stuff like that. And I'm the type of person that, you know, I'm packing for vacation. I bring like 17 different rolls, different stocks. So there's no like cohesive story to what, because I like to do it all. It's like, well, what if I need this? Well, what if I need that? You know,
that's funny because I'm the opposite. I'll stick to my one or two stocks. Because I'm just like, I know, but it's like crazy, like that to hear you guys talk and just know that the anxiety that would happen to me if I put one of those crazy roles in my film and I went to go shoot something, I'd be like, I don't know what's going to happen. This is just not going to be what I normally do. And I really should be like an exercise for me. Like maybe I'll do a YouTube video on like, I'm going to think all the way outside the box, you guys, and I'm going to shoot some red, like some psychedelic crazy film. Yeah.
It's healthy. It's healthy for your creativity, I think.
I think, I mean, I imagine it is, you know, I just, it's a me issue, you know, it's like a control freak
Chris
thing.
Chris has got the cold sweats going.
Oh, I know. I'm like, oh my God, if I can't shoot portrait, what am I going to do?
It's kind of like those Iron Chef like competition shows where they're like, today's special ingredient is crab, and you have to make a dessert that has crab. Like,
totally. The film version of that. Oh,
flexes
my God,
your creative
that.
Muscles.
I have that. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, then take it to the next level. You know, you do shoot this whole project on the film, and then you're a film super. You like throw it on the stove and
I mean,
boil
you know.
It in, you know, cat urine and gasoline, and it's just like, what's gonna end up happening with? with all these photos I just took.
That's the scariest film soup recipe I've ever
heard. Yeah, the house is going to blow, but you're going to get some cool images and smell bad, but it's a cat soup and gasoline. I'll have to write that down for later.
Yeah, have a camera on you at the time as well for like the resulting explosion.
Yeah. Yes.
And then film soup bat.
Yeah.
the whole camera.
But you know, as a viewer, I actually really do enjoy that kind of stuff. It's not like I'm poo-pooing.
Totally.
You know, I'll like look at people like Wendy Laurel, who like opens the back of her camera and gets all those light leaks. I'm like obsessed with her work. I can appreciate it. I just like, for me, I'm just like, I gotta step off the ledge a little bit, you know, put my toes in the water and try something new. But yeah, I think it's really cool.
So I had to like push myself to experiment more with high fidelity film stocks because I actually shot my very first roll of Portra like a week ago or like 2 weeks ago.
Cut it out.
No, seriously. I never shot Pro Image 100. I never shot Portra. I haven't shot Kodak Gold since like 2021.
Wow.
So I went on this road trip and I was like, okay, I don't want them all to be like, you know, fun, creative. I want to like get some like nice landscape shots that are just nice landscape shots. And I did. It was great. But like, it was more of a challenge because I was like, okay, the only thing that makes this image interesting is what's being captured in the image. There's nothing like, there's no secrets. There's no techniques. Ooh, that was a little bit harder than I expected it to be.
The flip side of that, I didn't think about that either.
Yeah, because I always try to do, I mean, I'm not like I open the camera up or I have never even film souped anything, but I do like the dirt. Like I have some expired Kodak P3200 and I know that it's just going to be the grainiest, gnarliest looking stuff and just stuff like that. Like I always like a lo-fi. I like the lo-fi aspects of film. Like, yes, you can get like, you know, shoot 8x10 or something like that and get all the resolution and all that beautiful stuff you want. But I still want like another accident to happen before it gets to the scanner of being done. I need some sort of like a scratch on the negative or something. Like, I don't know what it is.
You're the perfect candidate to like film soup, I feel.
Yeah. I'm surprised I haven't
like a film
done that
right
yet.
There.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You should definitely try it.
Well, I got a cat and I think there's some lawnmower gas in the shed.
Perfect.
So.
You got everything you need right there.
Oh, geez. I'm never going to forget that now.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
But that is like that. That's one thing that I really like about film as opposed to digital because, like, I mean, I joke that like film is my hobby and digital is my job.
Yeah.
But with digital, like the point is to make it look like there's not a camera involved, right? Like you want it to look as like high fidelity as possible, crystal sharp, like perfect. Whereas film, like you kind of want the camera to like leave a mark and like an impression on, or at least like the camera, but also the process, right? Like the darkroom, the tangible aspects of it. You want those things to be like ingrained.
Yeah.
Pun intended. In the resulting image. I think that's really like something that makes this medium stand out.
Absolutely. Even like an underexposed image. I think there's character to that. Where on digital, that would be a huge mistake, like unsavable, you know? If you get like a funky, cool, underexposed, like it's like a mood, you know what I mean? Like even the mistakes can be something that's worth like printing, you know?
Yeah. It looks like creepy, right? Like I shot a bunch on the Flick Film double shot last summer. And a bunch of them were underexposed, but they're underexposed in like a really cool way.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, actually, this is kind of a vibe. Like
that's the best.
Yeah, it's been so long since I shot digital that I just know that it was the editing for me that really took me out of it because I could just never get photos to, I would either over edit the crap out of it. And I'm not saying like adding different clouds or anything like that to it, just like way too much this or that put into it to where when I shoot, not to just sound like one of those, I shoot film for the, you know, the purest of it or something. Yeah, it's just a lot easier for me. And again, like I feel like we're all kind of guilty of it, of when a digital camera's in the mix, you're taking 3 to 5 pictures when you normally just take one, or maybe you're taking 15 to make sure you got the shot or something. You know, there's just, it's so weird how I used to have a Sony mirrorless camera for a while that I was trying to force myself to shoot every once in a while instead of taking film out all the time. And I would just be so guilty of firing off, just doing a couple of, I got it. But I don't know. Even knowing that it's a film camera, it's treated so much differently mentally to me. And each photo, even the bad, ugly ones, always mean something. I have a hard problem. Like digital stuff, I could easily just throw to the trash. You know, I'll never use these or look at these or whatever. I save every single film frame that I take.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's
I mean, just that alone makes it different, right? You could you could shoot off a gazillion and then hope for one, but then every, you know, the tangible aspect of like, this is, each one is a thing I could look at and hold, you know?
Yeah, it's an
hold
item.
It's an item.
Like,
yeah,
it's in
exactly.
my filing cabinet. Like, yeah. No, this is like something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, because on my road trip, I brought my digital camera as well. And like, you know, every time I saw something gorgeous, I would take 1,000 film photos of it, but I would take like 20 million digital photos of it. And I edited all the film photos and they look great. And I've shared them and I like have not touched the digital photos.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I will, man. Like, they're good. They're of the same thing. But for some reason, like, there's this block in my brain where I'm like, I just don't wanna.
Yeah.
But why? I don't know. It's hard for me to articulate right now, but I'm going to think about it more.
Just curious. You guys both shoot digitally professional. No, digital professionally. I switched the words. What do you have, like, when you go into editing, you put your SD card in, you load the photos in, do you have, like, how does that work? Are there presets that you do? Do you kind of, like, hit them all with a preset? Or is it, like, how does digital editing work now? Like, I think it's way past what I used to do, so I don't, how does that work now? Like, I'm just curious.
Well, I use Photoshop Camera Raw, I, like, you know, sort them all, you know, edit down from, like, 800 photos, maybe, to like, 150, throw the 150 in Camera Raw, and then there's sliders. And I just kind of, I very, very rarely use presets.
Okay.
I have like a artsy headshot preset that I use sometimes. It's got some interesting undertones, but usually I just kind of eyeball it, like, based on, you know, how the person looks, the lighting that I used, what they're wearing, all of that. And there's just like sliders on the side, and then kind of copy and paste that edit all over all of them, do some tweaks, and then export it all, and then do the retouching after once they pick which ones they like.
Yeah, it's sort of similar depending on like what it is. If I'm shooting like a headshot, it would just, you know, very minimal editing, like you said.
Okay.
You know, in the camera, we try to get it right, especially with lighting. So I was on a new TV show. I was covering for another photographer friend of mine, and we were talking about these cameras that are so good with ISO. We can shoot like ridiculously high ISO, and then like recover it in the AI software that there's out there now. And
jeez,
this is kind of like, I haven't worked on something with like this kind of lighting before, so it took me, she was like, bump up your ISO, because she was editing for me. She's like, you can bump up, she's like, I know you're afraid, but it's okay, like, you'll be all right. And these just cameras are just like amazing now, so I'm able to shoot like essentially in the dark and get really, really amazing stuff, to where I was doing
That's
this job
nuts.
10 years ago, you know, on a 5D marked whatever inside a sound blimp, because you had to, you know, quiet the shutter on set. And I would never shoot at these ISOs that we're doing now. And it makes our jobs so much easier. I don't really know where I'm going with the story other than
what,
like,
ISO? What ISO do you shoot at?
I mean, like 200,000. It was like,
what?
It was insane. Yeah. Yeah. Like,
obviously, like 1600. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That's what I, as, you know, wedding photographer, that's like as high as we would go, because.
Yeah, it gets dirty and noisy.
I get up to 1600, I'm stressed out.
Mush. Like, yeah. So I was like freaking out.
200,000. That's like night vision.
It was basically was. Yeah. And they were coming out good. Like, they're you know, like, I was able to shoot a higher shutter speed, so there was no motion. You know, stopping the motion was important. So, yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Crazy.
That's
crazy.
Wild.
Yeah.
That's wild.
I mean, I'm coming from Lightroom Classic, and do you remember the Visco packs that you could get for Lightroom? Like, I had all four, where it was, like, Portra 160. And, like, I would, you know, just crazy stuff like that. Like, that's how I edited it, because I was looking for that film look. So, I've never really done professional work with a digital camera, so I don't know how that all works.
Actually, I have a company that keeps reaching out to me that they do, like, film sims, like, simulator packages for Lightroom. And I'm like, hey, I need to learn how to use Lightroom before I can work with this company. But I'm actually really curious to see, like, how does it compare? Like, I'd love to do, like, some side-by-side of, like, Portra 400 and then the Portra 400 film sim, like, see which people prefer.
I wonder if I still have those Visco filters. I want to look at them again.
I bet you they're coming back around, man.
They even had, like, all the Polaroid kinds. You know, it was, like, Polaroid 600, Polaroid Peel Apart. something. It was pretty crazy packets. They were neat.
Cool. Are you talking about the phone app or are you talking about computer?
Well, it was the same that was on the phone, but they made like presets specific for Lightroom. And this was like right when I mean this is probably like 2010, 11 or 12, you know, somewhere in that bracket of time. Those were real popular and I was just getting into it, so I was like, yeah, I'll buy those. You can make it look like a Polaroid? Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That sounds, I want to find that actually. I want to find the Polaroid film sim. That's cool.
I haven't opened up Lightroom Classic, and I always use the new one because you can go like in between your phone and Lightroom now, like where you do. With Classic, I don't think you can do that with your phone. I like to be able to kind of edit together if I'm like, oh yeah, there was that picture and I can hop on my phone quick. But I don't know if I'll have to look. Maybe the presets are still there. I don't remember.
Well, if you find them, you got to let me know because I want to find that Polaroid one. That sounds cool. Yeah.
But even VSCO for the phone was a lot of fun too.
Yeah, those are the days. Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah, VSCO was probably how I got started with like artistic photography in like 2011.
Yeah.
Totally.
Or 2013, I guess.
Yeah, it was right because they would really, I mean, I remember like Levi's released a VSCO packet, you know, like Levi's jeans, and it was like their blues, VSCO blues or so. I just was so into it because it was just something cool and neat.
Your first taste of like photography in a different way. That's cool.
Just like the black slider, just drag it way
out. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it. It's crazy to think, too, like Joe Greer was like working with this.
I was
going to
say, that's how he.
His whole career.
His whole career.
Wild.
I think it's coming back. Like, I think the 2013, 2014 nostalgia is like kind of swinging back. And I think it'll be another couple years and we'll see like a revival of those editing styles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it. I quite like it. Yeah.
It's crazy how trends just keep swinging around like that.
And it's only been 10 years. It's supposed to be like a 20-year cycle, right?
Mm-hmm. But
I see it coming.
Well, film prices keep going the way they are. We're all going to be using.
I got actually, I got like a paper shoot. Have you guys heard of those?
Mm-mm.
No.
It's like
that?
A little digital camera, but it's meant to like imitate the feeling of shooting on film. So it's got four filters, I guess. But you take the pictures, but you can't see them after.
Huh.
You can't see them until you like bring them over. So you know you'll spend a day out with this camera taking pictures, and then at the end of the day, you like load them all in and see what you got. I guess it's like a good way to kind of counter, like you still get that film feeling where you're not taking 20,000 photos, but
what's it called again? I need to write this down.
It's a paper shoot. It's like really, they're really thin. I got it for my birthday and I've been having some fun with it.
I'm hunting for that. I need something new.
They're really cute. Yeah, they're really cute. But it's like, I guess there's like this whole genre right now of like digital cameras trying to like replicate. The experience of film, like not just the look, but the actual just like... Like there was that iPhone app for a while where you take pictures and then you're not allowed to see them for 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
I can't remember what it was called.
Where was I when this
came
out?
My sister-in-law was shooting with, it looked like a, I thought it was a disposable, but she was like, no, it's digital, but I can't see them. They like same thing, like not for 24 hours, something like that.
It's an interesting like genre of, I mean, I would call it lomography, I guess.
Yeah.
It's an interesting genre. It doesn't quite scratch the itch for me.
Almost.
Almost.
I've been running around with one of those little, I don't know if you can see it, one of those like little kid cameras.
Oh, cool.
Oh, is that the receipt paper one?
Yeah, it shoots on thermal. It's
They're like $40. I should just go.
Yeah, yeah. And like it's endless because like my job has, you know, we use thermal receipts. So I'm like, if I burn through this, you know, I'll just buy a couple packs for 3 cents off my boss. And but it's so much fun. Like it's the, you know, it's almost like a Polaroid or like an Instax or something, but it's, you know, you can only shoot black and white, and it does dot matrix, and then it does also like regular printing is like thermal. You know, it's not the best.
What does it look like? I'm so curious.
What, like a print?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can see.
Oh, wow. It's actually
good. So fun.
And that's dot matrix.
Wow.
So that's like little dots. I mean, there's like another car.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's right up your alley.
It's so much fun. I've been having so much fun with it.
I'm definitely like one of those is on my radar. It's the kind of thing that like I want, but I'm just never in a spot where I see it in a store and I'm like, that please.
Yeah.
Like, I leave the house and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go buy my receipt printer camera. Haven't done that yet. I really, really want one.
You have to. It's.
I know.
Because you're like a big, you love like Instax and stuff like that.
Oh, I mean, love Instant. Yeah, it's a ton of Instant. Like, and that just looks so cheap. And I have a ton of receipt paper. So, yeah. But okay. So one thing about the thermal paper is that it does degrade over time. So in like 5 years, it'll just be completely white.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned this because I used to keep receipts in my journals and be like, oh, we went out for lunch. And then now I look back at my journals and there's just a bunch of white pieces of paper.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Do you think there's like, can you like put like clear, I don't know, nail polish, shellac? Like,
I actually don't. Would that help?
There might be a way to save it. I mean, I use the Polaroid app and I just take a picture of it. I mean, if it eventually goes away, it goes away. But, and you're right, because I brought out a jacket I haven't worn in like 4 years, and it had Guitar Center receipts in it. And I was like, oh, it's when I got my amp, and I opened it up and it was just completely blank. I was like, well, that wasn't fun. Come on.
That's hilarious.
I love like little weird quirky stuff like that, though. I'm a sucker for it anytime, because for a while I would always get, you know, ads for just the printers. You know, it's like, for scrapbookers, buy this printer. You can send any photo to it. You can do that with this too. Like, I can send pictures to it, but I'd rather just, you know, take pictures with it. And...
oh, I totally have one of those printers, man. I have one that prints on like plastic thermal paper. I'll show you. I don't know if you can actually see this in the podcast, but I made little tabs.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, for my journal with it. Yes. Oh, it was so useful. Yeah, another random birthday present.
Man, good stuff.
I wanted to talk to you about your YouTube channel. How did that come to be? Tell us a story about how you, I know you talked a little bit about, briefly, like the message you want to send and talk, and things you want to talk about, but what inspired you to turn the camera on yourself like that?
Oh my God, it's such a lame, I had such a lame inspiration at first. I was like, I'm going to try and make some extra money on the side. Because while I was trying to make some money on the side doing photography, that was like not panning out. I think I was making like $60 a month or something. And I was like, okay, here's what the YouTubers are saying. They're saying you guys should start a YouTube channel. And so I started it. I was doing like a video a week. And like pretty quickly, I ran out of like, you know, mindless things to talk about.
Yeah.
And I can't remember like, oh yeah, I was doing a ton of these like outdoor shoots with just one model, and we were getting like nonstop harassment, like nonstop.
Really?
And so I made my first series that was like about harassment, and it, like, it was just stories of like, because I kept a Word document, and every time it happened, I would like put a new line in the Word document.
Wow.
And so I have like a 24-minute video. It's just me telling stories of like, here's this time that a guy came and like took a light out of my hand and told me how to hold it properly, like that kind of stuff. And then once I did that, I was like, actually, that felt really good on the inside to talk about. Like, maybe I'll make some more like this. Yeah, I was a little bit like afraid to mix, I guess I don't want to call it politics, but just like opinions and photography. And now I really try to like incorporate a little bit of it into most of my videos, just because like, sorry, like if you want to watch me, you do have to take my opinions too, right?
Well, I think that's like one of the best ways to find one's like true self too. I used to be so like that too, like try to play it even keel all the time. But now, you know, with how wonderful things have been the last couple, it's just I've lost holding things back and, you know, being polite about everything. I mean, not that I'm not polite, but just, you know, I think there comes a time of where, you know, not that everything has to be like a strongly, you know, a strong opinion, something, you know, you can have fun videos where you're like doing things that are not so aggressive, I guess. I'm speaking for myself, not towards you.
No, I totally agree.
I'm like, just saying, like, it's being yourself is the best thing you can do for yourself. Is not to sound like some self-helpy person or anything like that, but it's just so good to let it out. You know, you don't have to pretend. Playing pretend is awful. I
that's what a platform's for, right?
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna say about my job that I always call it like acting. Like, I go in and I put on performances at my job, and it's exhausting. You know, not that I'm like some miserable shrum or anything like that, but like. I, especially when I worked in like food industry and stuff, you know, it's just like, oh, my performance, like, you know, my bow at the end of the shift or something. It's, but yeah, I don't know why I went on a tangent about that. Maybe I have some self feelings I needed to let out about that. But
no, I mean, I completely know what you mean. Like, a lot of my early foray into photography was very like, I'm just going to leave my politics behind, and like, I am just a photographer. And to this day, I get comments that are like, oh, you know, photographers don't care about this stuff. Photographers don't like this. And it's like, well, photographers are humans, right? And like, humans do care about these things. So I am going to talk about these things as like, you know, a complete picture. Like, the photographers live in the world and act like humans. And so I'm going to address all of that when I address photography. And I mean, yeah, it feels a lot better. It feels a lot more fulfilling. It's great doing like the film reviews and the camera review videos. Like, I do enjoy those a lot from a creative perspective, but I really get like personal fulfillment out of doing like the video essay type stuff.
Yeah,
you nail those too. Like, I always enjoy and get a lot out of what you put out.
Yeah, they're important.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I try. I do my best. Yeah. Oh, you guys gotta watch the angle one. That I really
clicked
that.
Yeah.
So, do you have any like what's next for the channel? Do you have any like big projects coming soon, or?
Oh, that's a great question.
How do you keep it fresh, I guess?
It helps doing like gear reviews, because like, that is just a great opportunity for me to go out and be super creative in the way that I like being. Like we've talked about, like that's, you know, I have this piece of gear, I have to make beautiful photos with it. That's like exactly what I love to do. So in between like having good ideas for things to talk about, I'll do that. I think the next thing that I'm really excited to talk about, and I don't know how long it's going to take, but I read Lindsay Addario's autobiography called It's What I Do. And she's like a crazy photojournalist. She's like a war photographer. Oh, she goes to the Middle East. She spent like 20 years photographing the Middle East. Wow. She was there, like she had a child. She was pregnant, photographing like wars. Like
holy cow.
It's insane. Like listen to her autobiography or read her autobiography. It's phenomenal. But I really, really want to talk about that because a lot of people will say things like, well, we have no great photographers. Like, where are our great photographers? Where's our modern day Ansel Adams? Blah, blah, blah.
Huh.
You're like, no, there are great photographers. Like, you're just ignoring their stories because they're not like mythologized yet. But trust me, she will be mythologized. Yeah, so like, keep an eye on it now.
Yeah.
That I'm excited to put some thoughts together on that one, but might be a bit.
That's interesting, like just the thought process in general. Like, who are the greats right now? We think we might know who they are, but maybe it's somebody we're not thinking about, and time is the only thing that's going to tell when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah. And like, if somebody was if a modern day photographer was mythologized in the way that Ansel Adams is, like, would you like that? Like, I don't think I would like that. I mean, like Annie Leibovitz, I guess, is maybe the best example of like, like a platinum, top of the pyramid. And like, I don't know, I love her work, but I'm like, okay, every single cover does not need to be shot by Annie Leibovitz. Like, we're good. Like, it's okay. So yeah, I don't know. And people complain for the sake of complaining when it comes to the mythologization of photographers.
It's just a bummer too, because we look at like an Instagram following to categorize somebody as like a legend of photography or somebody that's doing well in photography. And I've been trying to go down that road of finding people that are like book photographers, or, you know, that don't really have a presence online, or if they do, it's like their gallery running it or something like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer that it got like that. I feel like it's getting better because a lot of people are kind of steering away from Instagram and stuff like that recently. Not that you should, you know, Instagram's great. I still open it 7 to 8 times a day, you know, just like everybody else. Well, maybe like 3 to 5.
Wow, that's it.
But it stinks because Instagram really turned into like reels, you know, where it's more of just like a TikTok where I don't really scroll the... Right. What's that called? The feed, I guess? Or
the feed. We're not seeing images anymore.
A lot of people have been putting, like, which I really enjoy. I like them anytime I see them, is when people do, like, image videos where they're like, this is the camera, this is what I shot.
Right.
Like, this is what I shot this week.
Right.
You know, and it's just really tough to stick out on... Like, if you were just a opinion or, like, an essay YouTube channel, like, you really have to take off on that, you know? Throwing in those gear reviews brings a lot of attention to your channel. Like, it's almost like a game you gotta play. Like, I sit here and make notes every other week of my big comeback to YouTube of, like, so I'm gonna have to do, like, 3 gear reviews and then one for me, like, type thing. If you want to look at it like that. Or, you know, some people just like creating things and hitting post and whatever happens. So it's interesting. I mean, do you see that, like, when you do like a specific gear review, do you see kind of like a spike in your analytics? Or
I wish I could tell you that I did, because like so much, like the film stock reviews, I do it partially because of the creative aspect, like taking the film stock out for a spin and having an excuse to spend money on film. I do it partially because like those videos perform really well, but then every once in a while I'll do one and just like nobody watches it, and I'm like, what? I did the same. This is the same thing that I do every time.
Yeah.
I find like YouTube is like, it's so unpredictable. For a while now, I've been like, okay, well, you know, it would be nice to like lean harder into YouTube. But honestly, like it doesn't make any money at all pretty much for me. Yeah. So I'm like, it's just for fun. And so I'm going to keep doing the things that are like the most fun to do and not really like push myself to do the things that are like the big money makers. At like 10,000 subscribers, big money makers is like, it made $60 in a month. Like, see, it only took me 40 hours of work.
Yeah.
And you're risking massive burnout when you're creating for others than yourself. It makes doing that stuff.
It just feels gross.
Yeah.
I've done a few videos that I like felt like I had to do. And I was like, oh, it was just such a slog by the end of it.
Mm. Yeah. Or the pressure of like, I got to make one for Wednesday, like every week, like, being a slave to that.
Yeah. Although, oh my God, okay, it has actually been good because I got a few sponsorships and they have like specific dates that they need me to release the videos.
And there's been a few videos that like are really good, and I pushed them out really, really fast because I had to get them for the sponsorship.
Yeah.
And I think that was a good thing because otherwise, I'm very good at procrastinating another week.
I know. Perhaps you love a good deadline every once in a while.
I like a deadline. Yeah, I work really well with deadlines, turns out. And you don't get a lot of them in freelance photography. So
no.
Good to have the excuse.
Man, that's why I always let the podcast to Saturday, Sunday for my editing because it's got to go up for the Patreon for Monday and release on Wednesday. So I'm always just like under the gun, Saturday and Sunday. I never work better. If I had 2 weeks per episode, it would never get done. It would still, I'd be like, oh, it's Saturday. I got to do the first half of the edit.
It's
Sunday.
I do that.
How is it 8 o'clock already? Like,
no. Dude, I will wait until like my video comes out on Wednesday, comes out every Wednesday, or like every second Wednesday. I will wait 2 weeks and then get to Friday and be like, I should start thinking about that video. And then Monday, I'm like, okay, I really got to do the video. Like I had a guy who offered to edit my videos, but I'm like, no. You don't want it because it'll be like, you'll have 48 hours to do it. It'll be terrible. Like, trust me, I'm doing this to myself.
That's hilarious.
Man, that's fun. We'll be right back with a listener question for Yvonne right after this message from our sponsor.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. We talk shop. We develop some film. We also try to get a former guest for these. And like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. All right, guys, the part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. This week's question comes from Endless Bra Moment, and they wanted to know, going into a session, how do you narrow down visual concepts for the shoot? That's a good question.
Yeah. All right. Well, I work a lot with big teams. So we'll have like a makeup artist, hairstylist, you know, sometimes even a creative director. I honestly really like working with large teams because you have a lot of different creative ideas coming together. And it doesn't all rest on my shoulders.
Yeah.
I find that when the responsibility for like all of the creative direction and all of the styling and everything does come down to me, I don't produce my best work. So going into a set, you know, I'll look at what the stylist brings to the table, look at what the makeup artist brings to the table, and we'll all have like kind of a chat about it beforehand, point out some of my previous work, point out like some mood boards, something like that, and then take that whole like cluster of ideas, like that nebulous constellation of thoughts in together, we'll put them all together and like hone this little like gem of a final shoot. So sometimes that can be like, okay, well, we really like the hard light look. So what kind of like ideas connect to a hard light look? We've got like, you know, texture and like shape and darkness and all of this. Yeah, I think it's mostly like helping, like letting other people help contribute to the set and then working around the constraints that those people provide. In a pot, like constraints is maybe not the right word there, but parameters.
That's something I've been so curious because I've never worked with a creative director or team like that, and I'm always curious to like how could it elevate, you know? Because there's always
totally elevates. Like the more people on set, the better my work. 99% of the time.
Wow.
Yeah, having a team is so. When I used to do music videos with my uncle when I first moved down to Nashville, the two that I did, you know, they had the hair, the makeup, the, you know, and they did the, I don't want to call it a mood. Well, yeah, it was like a mood board. And then they did like story, you know, boarding as well. And then it was planning this and planning that. And again, it's so cool to follow that, but it's really neat. I remember we were shooting a Johnny Swim. They're like a, it's Donna Summer's daughter. She's in like a music group with her husband. And we were shooting this music video. And I just kind of remember, you know, we got the one shot that they wanted, this and that. And I just saw this little like kind of brick thing along the side of the road. I was like, dude, we should definitely go down there. And she, you know, it wasn't scripted. It wasn't this.
Yeah.
It was just neat going off the, and then seeing that in the video was like, that was me, you know, that was me. But it's just seeing the whole thing come together. We were on another production where it was like, I forget who the guy was. He's some, I believe he was some country singer. But I mean, down to the, like having a grip team where they're taping and running wires and doing, you know, doing the whole thing. It takes, again, like you said, so much pressure off of you. Like being the one man band is so tough at times.
It's stressful, too much pressure. Like, you know, $1,000 photo shoot that this person's paying for. There's like five people involved.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the one to screw it up.
Right.
No. But yeah, I'm just really surprised that you haven't done anything like that, Chris, with being out there in LA and all the things you've done.
I know. I have a lot, you know, I have the community at, like, and within arm's reach too. I just haven't.
Well, I know you've always wanted to like direct and stuff too.
Yeah.
You really need to.
Yeah.
Get soon. On it, girl. Come on.
I know, soon. Yeah, I mean, that's really cool to think about because, you know, two creative, three creative, four creative heads are better than one, you know? And I love the, you know, bouncing all ideas off and like, oh, doing that, we should do that. Like, oh, what about this? Like, that part is also super inspiring and creative. And then to have a piece of art or work or shoot or whatever at the end and you could point to and be like, look what we all did, y'all. That's crazy. That's, you know, like, there's nothing better than that. Like, I was telling Timothy before I got on, or I guess maybe I was telling you too, but I wrapped a new show last night and there's like nothing better than when the team is just like, we did that. Mm-hmm. You know, we did that. Mm-hmm. We're like popping champagne and like hugging everybody. And like, yeah, just have like a mini version of that, like on a shoot one day, like it's got to be the best.
It's a lot like that actually. Yeah. Like for the really big shoots, like, I mean, we did one that had 33 people on the schedule for the shoot. And by the end of it, I was like, oh my God, it was like emotional.
Yeah.
It's like I've gone through a journey with these people.
I know.
Like, we've made some magic together. We were all filthy dirty because it was in an automotive repair shop, like for giant
so cool.
semi trucks.
Yeah.
And everything was covered in like this layer of grime, except for the designer outfits. They were only covered in a little bit of grime.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, I think my favorite thing to hear on set is when like somebody like a makeup artist or like somebody who's not directly involved in like the set of the photo will be like, oh, I think I have an idea. Like, do you want to, could you try this? I'm like, yes, like, please. Because that'll be like the shot is when this person's like passively watching, not like putting themselves to the strain of like thinking about what goes on next, using their creative brain, like really passively, and then just has this like jolt of inspiration and then feels willing to share it. Like it's good enough that they want to share it with the team. Like, we're going to do this magic thing.
And also like, I feel like you must run a set to where that's welcome. A lot of people, you know, have egos and are like, I'm the photographer. Like the fact that
couldn't be me.
Yeah. I love that whoever that was felt comfortable enough to be like, well, what if we tried this way? And you're like, hell yeah, let's do it. Like that's a testament to, I could just tell how you run your set. And that's the best. Because that's how it should be.
Yeah. It's like, you want to use that. Like, you have all of these creative people. You have all this creative energy in this room. Like, you want to be able to mobilize that.
Yeah.
If it's just me bringing the creative ideas, like, I don't know. I have a finite number of creative ideas that are available on any given day. Once we've exhausted all five of them, like, I'm going to need someone else.
Yeah, I know. And, like, the panic of, like, I'm empty looking around. Like, anybody else?
Okay, what next?
What next?
Give me your hand. Bring your arm up.
Yeah.
Let me get up on the ladder. Let me get down. Yeah. No. That's the worst.
Jeez. Hilarious and amazing at the same time because I've been there and I would have loved a creative director to be like, Chris, let's go this way, you know. Hilarious.
Actually, there's like a series of shoots that I've been doing for students, and it's like a styling class, and so they style like an outfit, but they also have to like style the whole shoot, and so they will come up with a mood board as like part of their class beforehand, and I get sent it like the night before, and so I have to like kind of put all the gear together and like you know, figure out how the shoot's gonna go based on this mood board. And oh my God, like it has been such a creative experience. It's been phenomenal. Just having someone else like, here's the vibe. Make this vibe a reality with, you know, this set. And I'm like, bet. Like,
yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I gotta love a good mood board, man.
Oh, I especially love it when other people make them.
Yeah. If it's not for a photo shoot, just like, I want to redo my living room one day.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Mood board.
Oh, yeah, I have like probably 36 mood boards on Pinterest. Yes. For this like different shoot ideas. I'm like, okay, it's cherry blossom season. Here's the 4 mood boards I made for that.
Amazing.
Oh, man. That's so good. I know we touched on you shooting like vacation photos and stuff like that. Kind of last photography-ish question until we, well, no, it's a photography podcast, so I lied right there. But just a question about your personal work. Like, I know you do a lot of like fashion and stuff like that. Do you still have, I mean, are you still shooting for yourself that's not like fashion, or is shooting fashion like for yourself? What's your personal work? Like, what's the stuff that keeps the spark and the joy of photography alive? What do you do there?
Actually, yeah, a lot of the stuff that I've been posting on my Instagram recently has all been like creative sessions that, you know, I just had spare studio time. So I invite a model to shoot some with me. It's really important to me to like keep up with that because, you know, if I'm doing a lot of creative personal work, then I'm constantly generating ideas. And when it comes down to like a paid client, then I already have like this nice Rolodex of ideas that I know how to execute and I know that they're going to work out. I'm not like iterating and like, oh, let me try something like while they have a finite amount of time. That's kind of where it gets stressful, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of that, like a lot of what you see on my Instagram where it's just like one model in studio would be creative work that I just do to like help enrich my creative process. I think I touched on it before, but like my experience in like an office job and in politics really, really showed me that creative outlet is like a vital part of my life. And so keeping that up, even when like, you know, if it's like headshots and wedding season, like still making time to do that creative stuff in studio is really, really important. Not for me as a worker, but for me as like a person. But also, I mean, that road trip that I did a solo road trip like down recently through the States, and that was all personal creative, like just for the sake of like seeing things and taking pictures and, you know, never saying no to an opportunity to get a good shot. And that was like really enriching. And I got some great photos, but like the experience was the enriching part.
Kind of just look back at more like memories of the trip using the photos for that. I always forget to use that as like a, like photography as a, like a diary or photo, you know, memory thing. I'm always like trying to frame the shot, you know, trying to get the, you know, the fancy. Man, well, cool. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of hit that before we did the camera question.
And I love hearing stories about people who, like yourself, who are like, oh, I'm going to go down this straight and narrow route. And then the creativity just like busts out. And you're like, I can't be this person. Yeah. I've got to create. I got to create. Like, I just love hearing that because that's how I feel. Like, it's like breathing, you know? I got to do it.
Totally. I have a few friends like that. Like, I have one friend who started out as a lawyer and now she's like a cartoonist. And like her cartoons are so good and they're so colored by her background as a lawyer, but in such a fun, like super unique way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I really like respect that hero's journey of like starting out as one thing and then finding yourself through the way.
Right.
So you wind up with something completely different.
Yeah. And it takes courage too to realize that.
Quitting that job was the scariest thing that I have done probably ever.
They don't, and they just stay and I don't know. Sad.
Yeah. No, for me, man, like I saved that like because as soon as I had that job, I was like, this is not gonna work.
Yeah.
So for a whole year, I saved up like every penny and I had like $10,000 by the end of it. And I was like, okay, this is gonna be enough for like 4 months of really, really minimal spending. Let's go.
Wow.
And that was like that was the whole runway that I had. And it worked out. But it was extremely scary at the time.
Wow. That's the way to do it though. I think a lot of people forget to you know, put a little nest in your your bank account when you're
Build the runway.
Like, I'm not a helicopter. I'm not just like gonna
jump right off the cliff. Yeah,
it's more of like a Boeing, like it's gonna be a really long coast before I get in the air, and then it's really slow once you're. But that's fine.
Oh, I love it. I love it, man. Well, yeah, I guess we have to give you the camera questions before we end
the
show.
Question.
It's a 2-part question. The first part is the desert island. Is there one camera like you cannot live without? It's your ride or die. It's going in the casket with you when you go. No.
Bury me with my Hasselblad.
Yeah. What's it going to be and why?
Well, I definitely going to be my F801S, Nikon F801S. Mm. I actually like got it tattooed on the back of my leg.
Yes.
So I have that. It's been, it was like my first professional camera. I've I have three of them actually, because one of them broke, and then I saw another one that was like $60, and I was like,
yeah,
I'm just gonna buy it just in case, that. You know. So I've got a bunch of them on my shelf. Yeah, no, it's like a fully automatic film camera. So it's got autofocus, it's got a light meter built in, it's got everything that you could possibly need. It's got a multiple exposure button, it's got interchangeable lenses, like
perfect.
Can't go wrong. Takes double A's. It's like, yeah, that's my ride or die for sure.
Man, that's I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Part two, the white whale. Is there anything out there that you know, you've always wanted to try, you have your eye on, you're just kind of scouring the internet looking for a great deal? Yeah. Is there anything that comes to mind? Like, you just have to have it.
Oh.
But you don't.
Up until recently, it was the paper shoot. Because I've been seeing ads for the paper shoot since like 2019 or something, like when I first kind of like got interested in creative photography. But I got that, and it's really fun. So I don't know. I'm interested in like 5x7 range finders, but I can't find one that's like a good quality and also not gonna absolutely break my bank account. I recently got my like kind of dream digital camera. So yeah, I'm
what was that?
Doing good in the white whale department right now. It was a Nikon D850.
Oh, I love the old Nikons. Yes.
It's really good. It's just like the best DSLR ever. I haven't switched to mirrorless yet, so I'm still like riding the DSLR train, but it was really inexpensive because nobody wants DSLRs.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I could get like a really middle of the road mirrorless, or I could get just the best DSLR ever.
Yeah.
So I got that, and it's been great.
Yeah, I remember the D800 was like my white whale back in when I was like obsessed with digital cameras. I was like, man, the D800 would change it all. Like,
it did. It was a game changer, man. Yeah. My photos just look better. They're just better now. They're in focus 100% of the time, which, oh my God.
That does help. Yeah.
It really helps. Like, because going from the D780, you guys probably don't know time about digital, but the D780, the autofocus is just trash. It's trash. Mm-hmm. And the D850 has figured that out, and my God.
I love it.
What year did that come out? Do you remember?
Couldn't tell you. Not too long ago, but probably closer to a decade than not. Oh my God.
Yeah, I'd say I think it was probably like anywhere between like 2016 and 18 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I still would keep up on, I loved like the old Nikon digital cameras. So I always like would, I still get ads or advertisements.
Old Nikon digital camera, man. I just got it.
I know. I'm sorry.
The brand new, beautiful, shiny.
Well, it's because everybody's
camera
on the mirrorless kick, you know, the Z, what is it, like the ZF or something? I forget what the new Nikon.
This is Z9? I don't know.
Z9.
I'll do mirrorless one day, I'm sure.
No rush, man. You got that D850.
Yeah, exactly.
They're
giving them away now.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, this is, it was long overdue. I'm glad that we've scheduled the time, because this is just what we needed. I feel like I love talking creative stuff. So thank you for that.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Where can everybody, where's the YouTube? Where's the website? Where's the Insta? Plug yourself.
Right. Okay, so my Instagram is yhansen_photography. My website is yhansen.photography. And my YouTube is Yvonne.
The letter
Hansen.
Y, right?
Yeah, Y is in the letter Y.
Yeah.
It's the first letter of my name. Some people pronounce it Yhansen. Didn't think about that when I chose the name.
Yhansen.
I'll get people like, hi, Yhansen. I'd love to book you for a shoot. I'm like, don't call me Yhansen. But yeah, those are my three main ones. I am also on Facebook and LinkedIn and Threads and like everything. But go check out my YouTube, Yvonne Hansen.
Yes.
Love it. Timothy, where are you?
Instagram, Threads, at Timothy Makeups. Some old YouTube stuff floating around. Go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups, timothymakeups.com. That is it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I'm Chris B. Photo on all of the things. I'm actually working on a YouTube video right now. We're redoing our garage to be like a shared office / studio space.
Nice.
So it's like a little behind the scenes of before and after. So I'll be coming back to YouTube shortly. And then hopefully that'll be a place where I can actually do YouTube and do shoots. So more to come, hopefully.
Look at that.
So yes.
Sweet.
Exciting stuff. And then we're Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram and Analog Talk Podcast on Threads too.
That's it.
All right. That's it. That's all we got now.
Beautiful.
Yvonne, thank you so much. This was
a
pleasure. Thank you for all you do in the YouTube world for photography and speaking the truth about stuff. We appreciate that always, and keep it up. And thank you everybody for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
First off, Chris and I would love to thank Yvonne for coming back onto the show. Like we said at the beginning, we had some technical issues about a year ago when we tried to record, and we were just so bummed out that the episode didn't work out, and just so pleased to get you back on. We love what you're doing with your photography and YouTube, and you're just awesome. You're the best. We can't wait to see what the future holds for your work, your channel, and everything. And again, thanks so much for coming on the show. Guys, it's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analog. Talk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only developing hangs over there, a private Discord server, and a bunch of stuff in the archives. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. For the patrons who already support the show, guys, we do not know what we would do without you. We appreciate each and every single one of you. All right, so that's it for this episode. Yvonne, thanks again for coming on. Guys, thanks for listening. We appreciate each and every one of you. We'll see you in a couple weeks with a new show. All right, later.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.